This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Still fever-free. And you?
What a treat. What a treat twice in 2 days. So we spoke to each other yesterday for our Facebook Live, which was going to go for, 10 to 15 minutes, and 58 minutes later, still there, after I'd stood on my chair and showed everyone my what I call pants and frightened the hell out of everyone because they thought I was about to flash my knickers.
Now, and can I just say, people were quick, smart onto that site, all sold out. So maybe you could contact.
I think I'm going back for another pair. They are just good pants. And I love it. If someone finds something that is decent, I love the share. So I hope I didn't.
Yeah, but they're sold out.
I know.
They're sold out in all colors, shapes, and sizes.
They are really, really good pants or trousers. Or whatever you care to call them.
Slack? I don't know.
And if anyone who didn't see the Facebook Live I'm talking about, Neon Cherry has these stretchy, what she calls droppies, and I just find them the most comfortable pants I've ever worn in my life. And if you missed our Facebook Live, we'll be doing one again this Friday. In fact, I think we might even throw one in midweek, Nikki, if we can get organized and actually stick to the idea of 15 minutes.
Just like a podcast with pictures.
Nikki, four fat expat questions I want to know. What is your biggest regret about your expat life so far? So what's a mistake you wouldn't make again?
Well, thinking about this, I would probably say down to it, well, there's a lot of mistakes, isn't there? Because you only learn as you go and you learn as you grow. But I would say, look, we wouldn't probably buy a house again in the US. And it wasn't buying the house. It was the fact that we didn't know enough about the type of house that we bought, et cetera, et cetera. So it wasn't even the research. It was just, I don't know. We didn't understand the US housing market. We didn't understand anything about it. We weren't a forced seller, but we didn't sell our house until nearly 2 years after we left, which was, it's problematic when you move countries and you have to deal with that sort of follow up and follow on and financial constraint that you have in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, there is nothing like the panic of not having the house sold before you go. I think I've told the story before. We bought a house in Houston, and Houston is well known for being a very flat housing market. You don't get a lot of growth. And we chose to buy because of the package we were on. We got a rental allowance, but we could use that rental allowance to pay off a mortgage. So,
yeah
so we did the whole, okay, let's buy something that we feel we could do a quick kind of bit of a redo and make some money. Spend about 20 grand on renovations to freshen it up a bit that we figured would make it look a lot better than what it was. It was one of those houses that it was a divorced couple who they'd had it for 25 years or so. So do you know those houses you walk into and it's still got a stack of magazines and all the old pottery from, 20, like it just needs a bit of a fresh. They haven't staged it. They haven't done anything to it because they're fighting and they both just want to get out of it. So that was our experience. And yeah, we didn't lose any money, but we didn't make any money. But what was really scary was our house sale fell through 2 days before we were due to leave the country. And we had the same situation. We moved to Qatar with a house on the market in America for, the next few months. And it's scary.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't lose any money or make any money either. We could have probably made money had we sold before when we left. But it's just having all that administration and everything going on back in another country when you can't control it and you can't physically necessarily do all the things you need. It just puts a lot of pressure on you, on, your relationship, on your finances in the short term, regardless of the long term. It's a lot of balls in the air, especially when you're trying to establish yourself in a new country as well.
Sorry, Nikki, I was going to say, having said that, do you think you could have got the rental you could have got a house that you wanted in the rental market that there was, because we've struggled to find a good rental. Yes.
And that's exactly why we bought our house, for the same reason. To pay a mortgage was to pay less than a rental would be, and we wouldn't have lived in as nice a house, et cetera. We didn't know how long we were going for, so we thought 4 years, which is how long we were there. So we thought that was a reasonable amount of time to own a house. In the American market, that's not necessarily the case. As you know, the markets are very school district bound, and, you know, there are all sorts of hidden things that, if you haven't owned a house in that country before, you don't understand about. But I think, no, we would not have had as nice a house to live in, and we would have struggled to find. We chose the school and then we chose a house, because that's how it kind of works in America, because we were putting our kids in the public
system. Not the church. I was told that in real estate, church came number one.
Well, it does if that's what you're moving for. We were looking at schools, but yes.
Yes, I remember our real estate agent, whose name was Cherry. Anyway, Cherry told us, number one reason is proximity to the church. Number two is proximity to the school. Number three is proximity to the office. Yeah, I was really taken by that. And then, of course, we lived behind this massive Catholic church. Therefore, many of our neighbours were churchgoers and members,
But see, your kids went to private school, which is different. So you had a little bit more flexibility in when you chose where you chose to live, whereas we had less flexibility because we were in the public system. So it's very defined, and you cannot go to school if you do not live in these streets. So, and then you have to have a house in those streets before you can register at the school. So it's kind of a convoluted process. Anyway, it's a learning and growing experience. I mean, my other regret would be, to be honest, if I can have two quickly, would be how freaking miserable I was for my first year in South Africa, that I would just get myself to pull my socks up, write myself a letter and say, it's not going to change anything to sit around and be mopey. So they're probably the two things that I have as regrets. One is a sort of financial administrative one, and one is a personal one.
Fair call.
What about you, Kirsty?
For me, I think I did not take enough photos, and we had so many moves in our early days, and I don't have photos of every kitchen that I lived in, do you know? And I don't have photos of every child's bedroom where I stuck wall stickers around the nursery. Do you know? I don't have those things that I wish I would have. I've got, you know, photos of children or videos of children, you know, in those moments and whatever, but I wish I would have taken more time to have really thought about those things that I was going to, because you think you're going to hang on to these memories and remember these things forever. And so I wish that I had done that. So if you're out there and you're moving around a lot, make sure you are really taking the boring photos. Take the photo of the garden, take the photo of the tree you planted, take the photo of the kitchen, you know, those things, so that if you ever go back and you drive past, you can see what is left of you that you planted and made and had.
I think now people would take those photos more, and not because they're consciously doing it, just because of the socials.
Yes.
Because when we were in our early expat days, there were no socials.
No.
So we were not taking photos. Like, I don't think if Facebook hadn't started when I was in Hong Kong, I don't think I would have photos of our Hong Kong flat, because the photos I have of them are from Facebook posts, you know, that pop up in my memory and say, you know, this is X year, 15 years ago, whatever. But I don't think I would have them if I didn't have, like, our first flat in Hong Kong, I have so few photos, and I would have to, you know, they're physical ones. But I think now people would probably have more, but it's still a very good tip. But I think that was probably our downside, that we didn't have those, didn't have the socials.
Yes.
Okay, Kirsty, what about you? What was your expat sweet spot?
Well, I was thinking about this, and initially I had thought that definitely my expat sweet spot was, you know, back in the early years, those first, you know, maybe Jakarta or Malaysia or Libya, like when the kids were little, because I was thinking about how sweet and lovely, because, of course, you've forgotten about the sleepless nights and getting kicked in the head accidentally by your child, or, you know, having poo running down your baby beyond. clothes or whatever, all of that. So I was initially thinking, oh, yeah, that was the sweet spot. But then the other night I just noticed, you know, once again with those Facebook memories, a lot of 2014 kept coming up and I kept thinking, looking at these pictures of 2014, thinking how fantastic a time it was. And I think 2014 for us, we had been in Doha for sort of 4 years. And so the kids were really very settled and comfortable. We had great friends. We were very settled and comfortable. And it was also the year before I got cancer and the year before my daughter went away to school. And I'm thinking maybe that was the sweet spot before everything kind of changed, because, I mean, things got a bit erratic once we hit the boarding school and the cancer.
Who knew?
With the whole back and forth and back and forth and, you know, the disjointed family and whatever. So I wonder whether 2014. But, Nikki Moffat, I also started to think, is it that our sweet spot right now is right now, and that we continue to look back at go, oh, with that, you know, that whole nostalgia thing of, oh, well, that was fantastic. No, that was fantastic. Is that what's going on? Is that you just don't recognize? I mean, I had this thought today when I was sort of on my walk thinking, I had a little panicked moment of, I hope this whole quarantine thing doesn't go away too quickly before I've enjoyed what I've got right now. Do you know that you've got all your children here and that you've, you know, I have a child that's made cookies today and a child that's made cinnamon buns today, and, you know, we've sat and read the
I book. Saw the cinnamon
oh
buns.
Did you
on the Insta.
Oh, she put them on the Insta.
Yes, she did. They looked very fancy.
They were good. Hence my walk. But it really is, you know, the three kids when I left had gone off, and the three were sort of sitting there together playing game together. And I was just thinking, I really hope I do everything in this quarantine time that I want to do, and I have those conversations that I want to have, and that this doesn't all end very quickly. Do you know this, you know, that everybody ends up back at school and whatever, and I haven't made the most of it. Okay, Nikki, what was your expat sweet spot?
Yeah, I also have two thoughts about this. One is, like, the early days, obviously, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about how there was one particular night in Hong Kong when we were in the car and we were driving somewhere, and I've talked about this before, and we talked about how we were going to buy this block of land at the beach and how, because of my job and the bonus I'd got, that we had enough money, we could do that, and everything felt fine. And then I just thought, wow, this is kind of cool that we're living this life and we can do these things that we may not have been able to do in a different place or time, or we just would be having a whole different order of our lives. And I remember thinking, that is so cool. I have this job that I love. My husband likes his job. I have someone at home helping me. I, you know, all this stuff, that my life was kind of easy, but also good, and also like different in a way that I hadn't imagined. It was probably about 4 years into Hong Kong. And I remember thinking, this is special. Like, this is so special. And we are so, it was before the term hashtag blessed, but had I been a user of hashtag blessed, it's something I might've put in my mind at that time. Like, I just remember thinking, wow, this is so special, this part of our life, or this time that we're having right now. And then,
yeah,
I think the next week something happened and I thought, this is really shit. But I think after that that was sort of like just one point I remember, but that was right at the beginning. But I think the other time I would say is when I got my head out of my ass, and our third year in South Africa. My kids loved the school they were at. Like, we were having a great time. South Africa, when you live a privileged life, is a pretty amazing place to live. I'd gone and climbed Kilimanjaro with a friend for her 40th. Like, I just felt that we were in quite a sweet spot. Schooling for my son, which is really important for us, it really is a barometer of how things are going in our house, was amazing. He was the happiest he'd ever been. My daughter was happy. she was learning to read and write. That was very frustrating for her in South Africa. They made her wait too long in her mind. And that was also kind of like a really sweet spot. But I think it's only because I didn't know what was coming next. Like I didn't know we would move to the US and it would be quite traumatic. So, and that's right. Part of what you're saying, like it was the year before your eldest went to school and the year before you had cancer. Like you didn't know what was coming next. And so that maybe is what made it feel that way when you're looking backwards.
Yeah. Because I guess if you had to define a sweet spot, it's what? It's good friends.
Yeah.
I think for me, sweet spot, good friends, lots of laughs, kids happy at school.
Yeah, kids happy makes a difference.
Yeah. Kids happy makes a massive difference.
I don't know. I mean, we were talking last week about how we're both quite enjoying this time with our families and how it feels like the world's a bit on hold, but we can still have this sort of little cocoonish kind of feeling.
Yes.
Yeah, that got blown out of the water here yesterday. So last night my daughter had a massive meltdown about everything that's obviously been going on in her head for a long time. We had the whole, why do I have to move every 4 years? Why do I have to leave all my friends? Because she feels that these days that she's not at school, she's missing out on the time that she's counting down to have with her friends. Yes. And because we know when we're moving next, which we've never known this far ahead, but because of the situation we're in with my husband traveling for work to another country, we've got more of a clear idea about what's going on. And so it just all came to a head yesterday for her and just had a total, just a very difficult time, and it was just a very, very tough afternoon.
I totally get you, and that is so funny you've said that because I had exactly the same experience. You and I talked last week, this is great, the kids are great, isn't this lovely, we're all together, and then the next day we had this massive blow up because we have the same thing. Our youngest had that exact experience of he knew he was on borrowed time in Qatar, and he feels that he is absolutely robbed of this time, and he's confused and torn. And, and I think there's a lot of people that look at him here in Australia and think, oh, well, aren't you lucky you're here in Australia? And he's thinking,
I want
to be with my friends. I don't understand why my life kind of just stopped and I'm meant to just pretend it doesn't exist. I have a girlfriend in Houston whose daughter's in her final year, and she wrote to me today and said there were a couple of things actually she said that blew me away. One is her in-laws that work in healthcare in the UK both have had COVID-19. Mm. And recovered. But then her daughter who's in her final year, of course it's meant to be prom tonight and that's gone and graduation is not happening. And, robbed. You've been robbed. There's no other way to put it. You can't recreate it. You can't make it happen again later. It'll never be the same. It's done. Yeah, it seems very unfair, doesn't it?
It does seem unfair, and I was a little bit less sympathetic to all these end of school things and end of university things in the beginning of this. I was like, this is a global health pandemic, people. Get with the program. You're not in a war, you're in your house. And then as it goes on and I see the real impact it's having on my daughter, my son thinks it's Christmas every day, that I do feel for the kids that are missing out on their rites of passages and their things. Anyway, Kirsty.
Absolutely. Nikki, quarantine pantry essentials. Tell me yours.
I have to say, Avos and 2 minute noodles.
And are your things different to what your children need? Because my things are very different.
No, 2 minute noodles are not for me. Right. They're for my children. Because my children don't eat sandwiches. And so lunchtime on a school day is usually perfect because I don't see them. But lunchtime on a quarantine day, on an ISO day, is a PITA. That stands for pain in the ass. If you're not familiar with that particular brand of English, but it just, they can't, like, unless they have some sort of bacon and eggs or some sort of like a sandwich. I try and sell them on toasted sandwiches. I'm like, it's not like a sandwich. It's like a toasted sandwich that's melted stuff. Sometimes I can send them to get that because I'm not making them lunch. I'm making them dinner every day and that's enough. For me, tuna minute noodles are a must because they're like a good, if they won't have anything else, they'll have those. So. That and the avo's for me because I just like having a ripe avo because I like to have it. Like I like to make up a little guac for myself to have, or I like to make, you know, you have avo with, now I work with Italians who have avo every day for lunch, like with their mozzarella and their tomatoes. And I just, a lot of avo. I like to have just a couple of avos in the fruit bowl so that you can pick a soft one. That's very selfish for me. And the 2 minute noodles is also selfish for me because it gets the kids off my back. What about you?
You know, well, I was thinking we haven't needed to have so much of a stocked pantry because we are very privileged, Nikki, that we've discussed before about where we live. We've had access to great food at all times. Like I really can't think of, apart from pasta running out for a couple of days, but we were lucky we had pasta in the pantry. There always has been an abundance of fresh fruit and vegetables and there's always been meat.
Yeah.
So really for my children, it's anything white, pasta, rice, bread, anything that goes with bacon, basically. They get up late, they make themselves, they do ciabatta with avo and bacon and egg. That's their standard. And then they eat whatever comes for dinner. But we've had some really good meals because there's been no rush. Do you know you can do those things where you soak something in the afternoon and then you go back and you put something, you know, under the grill in the, you know, a little bit later and you've made, do you know, I did a roast chicken the other night and we had the best stuffing, you know, you could ever have because I had time to make really amazing stuffing, you know. So we've had
– I made my first ever. I would say yeast because I found yeast in my daughter's baking drawer because you still can't buy yeast in supermarkets here because there's this secret German baking competition going on that I don't know about. But I made my first ever hot cross buns last Sunday and it took all day. I've never made hot cross buns before. Like every time I read the recipe, it was like, oh, knead them for 10 minutes and leave them to rise again to double their size in somewhere warm.
Do you think that's how we cook now, that we look at things and we go, yay, this is going to take me all day?
I was like, oh, my goodness. I was thinking, no, I can't go past another Easter. I tried to make them on the Friday, on the Good Friday, and then I got my sultanas out and they were out of date and they were all crystallized because I'd bought them last year to make hot cross buns and I hadn't made them. And so my daughter's all like, you said you were going to make hot cross buns and you never made them. Anyway, she ate one in the end and didn't like them. I don't like the sultanas. I was like, oh, God. So my husband and I were very happy. We toasted them for a few days for breakfast afterwards, you know, like pushed them in, and just, they were actually fabulous. I'm a big fan. But, yeah, I haven't baked bread every day, but whatever.
So I bought, when I was at the markets the other day, I bought wet yeast, which I didn't even know was a thing. And I bought that at the Italian, you know, grocers there.
Yes, you can buy it at the Turkish grocers here a lot.
Right, and that's how my oldest daughter made the cinnamon buns because you can't find dry yeast here for love nor money either. But the wet yeast only lasts for about 10 days and then you've got to chuck it. So, but it was quite interesting. She put it in a little bowl of water and it kind of bubbles away like a living, breathing thing. Okay,
Kirstie, you're 30 years old and you've just been offered your first expat gig. What's the first thing you do?
I would have much clearer goals about what I wanted from that gig. I think instead of just going, this is going to be amazing, we're going to be able to bank all our money, or we're going to be able to see the world, or we're going to be able to do this, or, you know, I'm going to be able to have some time off work, however it looks, I think I would have sat down with some very clear goals from what I wanted, maybe a 5-year plan. I know I sound so old, but I do think that's what I would advise anyone now, is to get it straight in your head of what you want to do, A, so you don't miss out on anything and you don't regret anything of not doing anything. I mean, Nikki, you and I have been so lucky. We've been doing this for 20 years. I've been doing it for, yeah. And I think we've just been so lucky that we've been able to continue to sort of keep traveling and keep meeting friends from all over the world and keep,
until, you know, 2020.
Until 2020. And then we, but we've been able to do that. And I think some people only get 5 years and that's it. Then they're home.
Yeah.
You know, there's some sort of thing. And there's going to be a lot of people like that this year. You know, maybe this is the end for us, Nikki. I don't know. But I think it's important then, if you're aware of that and you've got those goals in your mind, you know, if you know that you really, really want to go to Jordan and go to the Red Sea, you know, if that's what you want to do, make sure it's in your list of when you're going to do it and how you're going to do it so that you don't miss out. You know, if you know that you want that house deposit, or you know, like work out, set those goals on how you're going to do it. What about you, Nikki? You're 30 years old and you get your first expat gig. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm probably going to pop a bottle of champagne. Like, get excited.
Yes.
Because is it when I'm 30 and I know what I know now, or is it when I'm 30 when I'm 30? Because when I'm 30 when, yeah, I'm 30, yeah, I'm just drinking and thinking this is going to be awesome. but one thing I would say, and I look, I agree with the clearer goals, and I think the thing is, you don't have to say I must save every penny. You can say I must do all those things, because, well, yes, when you're Australian and you live in Australia full time, it's freaking a long way to go to somewhere else for a holiday.
Yeah.
So if, yeah, you, I mean, we hadn't done anywhere in Europe before we moved here because it was far from where we were. So we always tried to say local-ish to holidays where we were living. Like in Africa, we tried to, like, to go to Africa from most places is far and expensive and long. So unfortunately, we had smaller kids. It wasn't super ideal, but I mean, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro is something I never would have done if I'd lived anywhere else. Like, that was just because I lived in Africa. So I think that it's important to think about what you said about, think about where you want to go in relation to where you're going to be, as well as financial goals. And you can have both, or you can have one or the other. You can say, I'm just going to spend these 5 years and I'm going to come back with what I left with and that's it. And I'm going to make sure I do all these things. And when I come back for 5 years, I'll save and do whatever. I won't have to have big overseas holidays because I've done all that. So there's all sorts, yeah, of things that you can do and ways to do it if you're for a five-year plan. One thing that I would say is probably paperwork and admin. I'm not the superest at it, but I would say just get that in order and change your freaking address, because I'm like three countries behind sometimes in things. Like, you just have some sort of format and structure for your paperwork, have an Excel spreadsheet. Like, I think that's so much easier these days. There's apps and there's all sorts of things, but just know where all your accounts are and when and where you have to change your address and what you can move online, because it can be quite painful a year down the track and you realize I forgot to change this particular address. So
yeah,
that to me is just sort of have your admin goals. Marie, you know, can't go your admin.
Yeah. I wonder, Nikki, you know, we always had my parents' post office box and it has been a godsend to, yeah, just have that mail going to that post office box. And of course, you know, now we've got our own and we have children that can come and check the mailbox and, you know, do stuff with it. But yeah, I you're absolutely right. Either change your address or make sure you've got that one address that just everything goes to, because that can help you out a lot too when you repatriate, that if you've got that existing address and you've got stuff that's been going to that address, you know, if it's bills or if it's something that just this shows that, yes, you are a real person, you do exist. Okay, Nikki, we're moving on to three favourite things. What are yours at the moment? Give me a couple.
I think I share one with you this week, which I've been watching for a few weeks, and I think it's in yours and in mine. But I'm loving the Aussie spirit during the ISO and the bin isolation outings, or ISO outings with the bin
absolutely,
people.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah.
I do love it. And the people getting dressed up. And I have to say that it's There's friends here in Hamburg, Australian friends did the same thing. So they got dressed up. Their whole family was dressed up in different outfits. There was a Pikachu and there was like the parent was the Pikachu with one of the bins. And then all the kids jumped out of the trees on the way down the footpath. And I think the Germans probably would have thought, who are these crazy, crazy people? But if you understand the context of the Australian bin isolation outings Facebook group, then you would understand why it's happening.
Yes. So you go and have a look. And what I also love about the bin, it's called bin isolation outing. And so people dress up to take their bins out. And some people have dressed up and sang songs, and some people have dressed up and performed, and some people have got into amazing character. There was a guy who did a whole New York, Frank Sinatra thing about start spreading the news. I'm leaving. And he changed all the words to be like, but the thing is, people have been so clever with then presented it. Yes. But yeah, there's been all sorts of characters. And I think what I've loved is they've been able to show their Aussie spirit to people from all other countries, because there's been so many people that have written in there, I really want to come to Australia now. Like, you guys are fantastic.
The Australian Tourist Bureau couldn't have thought up a better campaign than bin isolation outing Facebook group.
Now, Nikki, have you watched Unorthodox yet?
I haven't. On Netflix? It does pop up a lot. Good. It's always a recommendation for me. And I'm just, you know, I'm just stuck in this. I just want familiarity. I'm not ready to start new things. But I think I will. But tell me about it. Tell me on it.
It's good. Okay, so it's based on Deborah Feldman's book. She wrote a memoir in 2012 called Unorthodox, The Scandalous Rejection of My Hasidic Roots. It really does stray from the book. No, I went back because it's one of those things that you watch and you find yourself constantly Googling to go, is this correct? Do they really do this? Is this really correct? And then you want to read everything you can about her to sort of know how much of it is really true. So in the Netflix version, she grows up as an Orthodox Jewish woman in New York and does everything by the book that she's meant to do, and marries her husband by the time she's 19. And, you know, they live a very strict Orthodox Jewish life. And that's the whole, you know, shaving of the head before she gets married. And it really shows you every inch of how that life looks and what it looks inside their culture and their world. But where it differs from the book is that they have her in the Netflix series going when she escapes, and I'm not giving anything away because that all happens very quickly. You know that that's the whole thing of
the premise of it. Escapes. Yeah, it's the short on the Netflix thing as well. She goes to Berlin.
Yes, she goes to Berlin, which is really interesting. And she goes to Berlin and she befriends some musicians, and it's all about her playing the piano and whatever. She's not, and that is not her. She is a writer, and she went on to become a writer, but she also didn't leave until after she'd had a child, and it was, you know, a few years into her marriage and whatever. And she actually says that she never really did have the confrontation with her husband. And in this, there is very much the confrontation with her husband.
I should say she comes to Berlin, not she goes to Berlin, because Berlin's here where I am.
Look, it is really good. It's what is good, Nikki, that you might like if you aren't keen to jump into something. It's only a four-part series and it's 50 minutes each.
Okay.
And my girls have both watched it and both loved it. So I think it's really interesting. The woman who plays this New York woman is actually an Israeli actress, and they speak a lot of Yiddish in it as well. And also what I really like is there's a scene with the people that she meets when she's in Berlin, because there's a lot of conversation about Hitler and Jews and the whole German side of things. But she also becomes friends with someone who is Israeli and is Jewish, but it obviously is not a strong cultural, like she's more a cultural Jew than an Orthodox Jew. And so she has her own misgivings about her as well. So it's really, I thought it was really great.
Interesting. Well, in the spirit of my softly keeping with predictions and what I know, I've been rewatching the 7 seasons of The West Wing, which is one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
Lovely. That's
and
so
it's just so nice. I'm like, I remember this episode. You know, like it's just one of those things. But it's so funny because I listened to a podcast this week and they talked about what people are watching, and apparently The West Wing has just gone through the roof, as in the rewatches on the ratings on Netflix. So it's obviously one of those things that people are also going back and watching old series. But I also took one of your recommendations from last week and I'm started listening to The 11th, the podcast about Off-Witland, which I'm loving. I think that's fantastic.
It's really well done, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really well done. And the other thing I'm worried about is like when we're going to run out of TV, because all the, like, no one's producing TV. They haven't been producing it for about 2 months. And all my shows, in inverted commas, the series I watch, Grey's Anatomy, they finished early. They didn't finish a full season. They just made the last episode, like episode 22, not episode 24 or whatever. So they finished the series and the season early. So I'm wondering what Netflix and Hulu have up their sleeves to release to keep people, and certainly the networks, what they're going to do to keep people happy, like over this sort of period once they run out of TV. What's going to happen?
Will it be the hub thing again, Nikki? Will it be they will have to create hubs where people go into isolation for 2 weeks and then all work together for 2 months and then return home?
Yeah. Is that the only way? That's what they're talking about for your favourite football, isn't it? They're talking about
And then, I'm on the edge of my seat as you're saying it. I'm like, yes, yes they are.
That's what they're going
to tell
about.
Us. In 2 weeks' time, they're going to tell us, some of those that don't know, they're trying to work out how to play AFL football here. And they are talking about having 3 hubs where they set them up in 3 different states. And, of course, those states would be the places that are having no person-to-person transferring. And in my state, we've had 0 today and we had 1 yesterday and 1 the day before. So
person-to-person or cases, like the new cases?
Cases, no new cases today, which is
excellent.
Lovely. Yeah, it's really, really lovely. So you would hope, but, you know, it's this crazy thing where you're going, oh, I hope the hub's, you know, in my state, but then it's like, but I'm not going to see it. <That's> like.
Well, you will see it on TV. You won't be able to go and actually see it, but you will be able to see it on TV.
Yes. So, but I am desperate that they do have it and it does work. And I can see how it can work, that if you are going to isolate all those people together and that they are going to stay in the one place, because they're saying that what they're hoping they'll do, because we're having no Olympics, is that during that time when the Olympics would usually be shown, they will just have football every single day, which to me, Nikki, is
that's heaven.
Heaven, that is heaven on a stick. Yes. So I'm hoping, and they're going to tell us in 2 weeks' time. So let's just wait to see.
What else have you got?
We have been playing BS, the card game. I would love to be able to say that we've been playing Canasta or 500 or, you know, something a little bit more refined, but we haven't. So we've played BS, which is a great one, even if you have little people.
So what are the rules?
So the rules of BS is you serve out the deck till it's all gone. So everybody gets however many cards that is, however many of you are playing. And then you start off with, you know, ace, 2, 3, 4, and you've got to put down the cards in the number that they've got to go. So you might put down 1 ace or 2 twos or 1 3 or 1 4. Now, obviously, and when it gets to you, if you're a 5, you've got to put down your 5s. Now, if you don't have a 5, you've got to pretend to put down a 5, but someone's got to be able to decide whether they call BS or not on you. If they call BS and you have put down the 5, well, then they've got to scoop up the whole deck. And that
hang on, so the cards go face down?
Face down. And you might say, I've got three jacks, and everybody else is looking at each other desperately wanting to know, well, I've got one jack. I wonder if anyone else has got another jack. Or if you happen to have two jacks, well, then you'd know that person is BS. And so you'd say BS. And so, and that's how it goes. And it's fun because it's cheeky and it's fun. And if you get away with it, and what's the term? Oh, you say baloney. My kids obviously learnt this in America to be saying baloney. So if you've gotten away with it and it goes on to the next person and you've gotten away with putting down, you know, three cards and you didn't have any of those cards, you'll say baloney and then everyone will know you've been a cheat. But it's fun. We've had a few games and there's been lots of giggles and lots of laughs. It's been good.
So, but you never pick up from the deck. Like you never say, oh, I don't have a five, I'm going to pick up from the deck.
No, because you've got to be sneaky.
Okay, right. Yeah, no, just obviously I've evaded this game for nearly 50 years, so I'm going to have to look into that. Anything else before we wrap up, Kirsty, from your side?
One last thing. It's a Facebook page called Yes, I'm Hot in This, and it's a great Facebook page of a woman who does cartoons. And she does great cartoons on Muslim life and the beautiful messages that kind of bridge the divide. So there's one, they're all kind of quite cute and funny. She's got one of, you know, she's standing there in her hijab. Someone comes up and says, is it okay to compliment someone on their hijab if you're not Muslim? She says, yes, absolutely. Of course you can compliment them. They go, oh, thanks for letting me know. And she says, did you want to compliment me on my hijab? And they say, yeah, thanks for letting me know. And she's very cute. She does a whole skit on, you know, the whole dilemma of a Muslim of do you wean yourself off coffee before Ramadan, or do you just decide you're going to get up that extra half an hour earlier to have your coffee, you know, before the sun comes up, you know, the whole thing. But it just lots of little things that I think if you were someone that didn't have a lot of Muslim friends and you were things that you wanted to know but you weren't quite sure how to ask, this is a great page to go to.
Oh, sounds good. All right. So we'll have the link for that in our show notes, as we always have the link for all the things that are our favorites and that we talk about during the show. So that is it, Kirsty. Next week we're going to, or during the week, we're not quite sure yet, we're going to put together all the messages that people have sent us from around the world in regards to their isolation days, what's going on, where they are and what they're doing and how they're coping. So that's exciting. We have got some awesome messages from some amazing locations. So I'm looking forward to putting that together.
Yeah, it's a good one. Okay, Nikki, I will see you during the week. Maybe we'll do another little sneaky Facebook Live. Who knows? Because we've got a little bit more time on our hands at the moment.
All righty. I'll see you then.
Okay.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.